From NPR News, this is Foreign Dispatch, a weekly roundup of some of the best coverage of news and events filed by NPR's correspondents from around the globe. I'm Kevin Beasley. This week, Afghans count the cost of a rampage, France in shock after a terrorist attack, and Einstein's papers, 80,000 of them, go online. After the recent mass shooting of Afghan civilians, allegedly by an American soldier, we learned many details of the suspect's life. But there was much less coverage of the 16 Afghans killed and 5 wounded. And each of those victims had a story. NPR's Quill Lawrence spoke with an Afghan farmer who lost 11 members of his family.
Afghans say they're so inured to civilians killed in wars that they bury their dead and move on. That's not so easy for Mohammad Wazir, who lost his mother, his wife, 2 sisters, his 4 daughters, 2 nephews, and 2 of his sons last week. My little boy Habib Shah is the only one left alive, and I love him very much, says Wazir. The boy cried next to his father as he spoke by cell phone. Wazir admits that 4-year-old Habib Shah was his favorite, and that's why he took the boy to travel with him. While they were away, tragedy struck their tiny mud brick village. His oldest boy, Ismatullah, had just started to grow soft whiskers. At 14, he was tall and strong, turning handsome, his father says. He was in elementary school about 5 years ago when fighting erupted and all the schools closed. Ismatullah joined his father in the fields like other boys in the village, as their district, Panjwe, became one of the biggest killing fields of the Afghan war. Every day after prayers and breakfast, Ismatullah would join me in the fields and we'd work through till noon. Then he could go play, says Wazir. Ismatullah loved Tup Danda, an Afghan game like baseball. Faizullah was next oldest, about 8. After the schools closed, Faizullah got a little spoiled, Wazir admits. The boy loved to ride a bicycle around the village, and whenever he could, he'd grab his father's cell phone and play games on it. Also shot, stabbed, and burned was Wazir's brother, Akhtar, about 21 years old and just married, no children yet. Like anyone, I wanted my children to be doctors, engineers, important people. All my dreams are buried under a pile of dust now, says Wazir. Men from Kandahar don't traditionally talk about their wives or daughters in public, certainly not to the press. Wazir's daughters were 12, 8, 3, and 2 years old. Their names were Masoma, Farida, Palwasha, and Nabia. His 60-year-old mother, Shakarina, was killed, along with his wife, Zahra. I love them all like they were parts of my own body, Wazir says. I miss all of them terribly. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Kabul.
Coming up, France in shock after a terrorist attack, and Einstein's letters go online. This is Foreign Dispatch. I'm Kevin Beasley. The gunman who said he wanted to bring France to its knees went down shooting in the southern city of Toulouse. His death in a gun battle with French police brought a dramatic end to a 32-hour standoff. 23-year-old Mohamed Merah had admitted killing 7 people in 2 weeks, including 3 children and a teacher at a Jewish school and 3 French soldiers of North African origin. For France, a national ordeal is over, but now the investigation begins. And as NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports, the authorities face difficult questions about how Merah was able to commit his crimes.
Reporters were live at the scene this morning when police stormed the apartment where Mohamed Merah was holed up. Merah had been incommunicado since the night before, leaving many to believe he committed suicide. But when SWAT teams forced the door and went in, they discovered Mirat was far from finished. French Interior Minister Claude Guéant, speaking through a translator, describes the raid that injured two policemen.
The killer came out from the bathroom, blazing away with his submachine gun. At the end, Mohamed Mirat jumped out of the window with a gun in his hand and still shooting. He was found dead on the ground.
Guéant says Mirat died from a bullet in the head. In his apartment, police found Molotov cocktails, guns, and a bin full of ammunition. Before he died, Mirat told police where to find the motorcycle he used in his crimes and a car. Inside the vehicle, police found a camera. As suspected, Mirat had filmed every detail of his massacres. To one of the soldiers he shot, he said, "You kill my brother, so now I'm killing you." France is agonizing over how a young man who was born and grew up in Toulouse could turn on his fellow citizens so ruthlessly. Mirat was raised with his three brothers and sister by a single mother. His parents came to France from Algeria decades ago. Mostly what you hear from people in Toulouse is that Mirat was friendly and even courteous. Around the age of 15, Mirat began to rack up a petty crime record. At 19 and 21, he briefly spent time behind bars where he allegedly was introduced to extremist ideologies. In 2010 and 11, Mirat made trips to training camps in Afghanistan and Pakistan. He was put under surveillance by the French Secret Service upon his return. As France grapples with the fallout from the drama, French President Nicolas Sarkozy told his countrymen they must rise above their indignation and anger to remain united.
Nos compatriotes.
Our fellow Muslim citizens have nothing to do with the insane motivations of this terrorist. Let no one confuse this issue. Before killing Jewish students, he shot Muslim soldiers at point-blank range.
But others are already saying, "I told you so." Marine Le Pen is the far-right National Front Party candidate. She is in third place in presidential polls.
Depuis 10 ans, je dis...
For the last 10 years, I've been warning of the rise of radical Islam in our country. For 10 years, I've been saying the connections between Islam and crime are rising and that some entire neighborhoods are falling into the hands of radical Islamists. And I repeat that we are underestimating this danger.
Sarkozy wasted no time in announcing new measures to fight against the rise of future Mohamed Mirats. He said those who regularly access internet sites that preach hatred will face penal action, as will those who go abroad for indoctrination in terror ideology. And, said Sarkozy, there will be a review of French prisons because we cannot allow them to become indoctrination grounds for extremists. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
The most famous scientific thinker of the 20th century is going online. The papers of Albert Einstein, some 80,000 of them, belong to the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and the university is digitizing and uploading them to the internet. Soon people will be able to read Einstein's letters on both his scientific studies and matters more intimate. NPR's Lourdes Garcia-Navarro reports from Jerusalem.
So I'm standing over a glass case, and inside is a manuscript that shows, in Einstein's own penmanship, one of the most famous equations in the world, E equals mc squared.
Let's have an opportunity to share with the richness of culture and to the future of research all over the world.
The president of Jerusalem's Hebrew University, Menachem Ben Sasson, says high-resolution digital scans will be made of everything in the archive and put on a site that's open to everyone. Up until now, most of Einstein's personal effects here were gathering dust in the university basement and were only available by request to scholars. What the trove uncovers is a picture of a complex man who was concerned about the human condition. In one letter to the editor of the newspaper Falastin, Einstein, a Jew, suggested a council of elders of both Jewish and Arab backgrounds convene to resolve the Jewish-Arab conflict taking place under British mandate. Menachem Ben Sasson says that Einstein was a man who engaged in the great debates of his day. The archive shows, Ben Sasson says,
that even a genius could be humane.
Einstein wrote many letters to his family. This one to his mother in 1919 reads in part,
"Dear Mother, they have written me that you are not only in a lot of pain, but you have gloomy thoughts. How I would like to keep you company again, so you are not left to ugly brooding.
It is signed affectionately yours, Einstein. Einstein was not only a son, he was a lover, and he had many mistresses. He is alleged to have said about marriage, "It's the unsuccessful attempt to make something lasting out of an incident." He was 21 years older than one of his mistresses. Many years after their affair, she wrote him about her terrible situation living as a Jew under Nazi rule.
Thinking about a time that was 15 years ago, maybe you can help me now. I have lost my livelihood.
She asks him for help emigrating to America, where he was then living. He provided it, and Benny Newman began a new life in the U.S. Leonard Polonsky helped fund the preservation of the Einstein Trove. He says the online archive will allow both the curious and the scholarly insight into an incredible man.
The fact that he has what might be considered frailties is a wonderful display. It's a wonderful statement that we're all, in our ways, complex. We do things that we're proud of. We do things that we don't think about. We do things we're embarrassed about if they were put on display.
And Polonsky says they are on display now for anyone with an internet connection to see.
I'm not sure what Einstein's reaction would be to the fact that his letters are going to be read. I think the man could handle it.
Lourdes Garcia Navarro, NPR News, Jerusalem.
For more international coverage, you can listen to your local NPR station. You'll find a list at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find more international stories by clicking on News and World. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Beasley.